This is The Topic is Trek, episode 87 for Friday, March 12th, 2021. Coming up in this episode, ViacomCBS does it to us again. Paramount tries to reboot the big screen. We try to make our way to the Nexus. All that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. Emotion chips and salsa. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of The Topic is Trek. As it already said, as advertised on the tin, this is indeed the show where we talk about lots of Trek things. And I can't do it alone. I am one of your co-hosts, Clinton Allvord. But joining me, as always, first of all, beaming in from parts of the galaxy that you don't want to go to, is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Oh.
Mostly beamed in.
I like that timing. Dope.
No. That's it. That's the catchphrase this time. Dope.
It's getting worse. It's getting worse.
Yeah.
We're going downhill. And you heard his voice. Now you get to hear his voice. Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
This must be some kind of podcast.
It is. Drink, everyone. Well, how does it feel now to live in a Paramount Plus world?
Fine. It's fine. Fine.
I like your post where it said, continue watching Star Trek the Animated Series. Like, no, please, no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, that was the screenshot I saw when I pulled up Paramount Plus. Continue watching the animated series. No, I think I'm done.
Please, we've had enough.
We found the hidden episode, lost episodes. We're going to show them to you now. No!
Well, you know, I looked at, I don't think there's more Star Trek than there was on CBS All Access.
No.
No, well, how could there be?
There isn't any more Star Trek, so it's kind of hard for there to be more.
But no, hear me out. Okay. Even the movies, there's only, you know, they only have a couple. Right. A few. That's what I was getting at.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's because of the licensing rights they'd already signed away. Yes. Before they decided to do this. Because
if you look at the movies, all I see is Generations, Voyage Home, and Nemesis, which I know they do shuffle those around between Netflix and Hulu and Prime and stuff like that. So, but I was like, okay, they're going to be all in one place, but they're not.
I would imagine it eventually, although I don't know. We had that article from several episodes ago where they don't really necessarily want to lock it all in to Paramount. Sure. Plus, because then your audience is limited to people that have Paramount Plus.
Yes.
So you want to have something out there.
Well, it's like I don't expect the Next Generation or any of those, Voyager, to leave Netflix or Prime. You know, they'll probably always be there, which is fine. But and it's because they're a gateway for a lot of people to other Star Trek stuff.
Right, and the same might end up happening with, you know, Discovery or other things eventually. A couple of years down the line, they may release those out as that same concept of, well, this was one of our most recent Star Treks, but we have all these other ones now.
And they kind of did. Actually, they broadcast Discovery, remember?
That's right.
Yeah.
So, because they ran out of content.
I wonder if they censored Tilly, though. How did they work that?
I don't know. I did.
Now she says fudge.
That's right. Oh, frack. No, wait, that's the wrong franchise.
Frack.
I did do a
Feldekarp. Where are we going with this?
I did an analysis of, though the longest episode that I could find of Star Trek Discovery. I think we talked about this on the show that I was going to do it, but I actually did it. The longest episode of Star Trek Discovery and what would happen to that when they put it on CBS. It was a combination of two things. First of all, the opening theme, rather than being that whole elaborate thing, was just Star Trek, the main Star Trek old school TOS theme, and the Discovery whooshing out. That was it. Nothing else was in the title sequence. And then every once in a while, because I put them in a video editor and I could tell, they would speed up the playback of certain scenes. So they picked up several minutes of just speeding up ever so slightly various scenes to make it all fit into
them. So they made it look like TOS?
Well, no, what they did, you know, on Discovery, you have that very last shot where it says Star Trek Discovery. It's against that parchment paper and the Discovery whooshes across. That was it. That was the entire title.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sequence.
I got you.
So you had no credits and you had no, you know, the drifting around the plant and all those. None of that stuff.
Right. To account for some time.
They just put in yakety sax as it was sped up.
Yeah. Okay, and that's as much as we can do of that song, so we'll move on from there. Well, something I look forward to, and by looking forward to, I mean I never look forward to it, because we have to now check with clearance here, practice and standards, if you will, because, Charlie, it's about time to open up subspace chatter.
He's our chief pessimist officer.
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
All right. Well, despite what you say, Charlie, we do need it. And Chuck is going to start us off with the first story.
And it looks like Paramount Plus, Viacom, CBS, whoever they are, still isn't working with us on our schedule.
Oh, they're working against us. They
do this on purpose. Mm-hmm. Let's release news on Thursday night at about 11 p.m. Eastern.
We'll show them. We'll record another show Saturday.
Well, this news broke right after we recorded last week. In an online call with investors, Viacom CBS revealed the first images of the characters in the upcoming Nickelodeon series Star Trek Prodigy. The single image shows six new characters, each appearing to be from a different new species. Mm-hmm. The characters include some kind of robot. I'm sorry, I had to do that.
Yes. Drink
or Android.
Some kind of
a morphable blob, a large, powerful looking creature wearing overalls. Bunny. he's escaped from Nightmare Before Christmas, I think.
Right.
As well as three more humanoid looking aliens. Viacom CBS did not reveal the names of the characters and series creators and showrunners. Kevin and Dan Hageman say the names will be revealed when the time is right. The Hageman brothers also trolled the Twitter by tweeting out an altered image of the TOS crews, depicting them as young children. Hey, right. We saw that in the animated series, right? When they were reverse aging. The counterclock incident is real. Okay, it's had the caption, "What did you think Star Trek Prodigy was gonna be?" And then somebody did, what was it, a Voyager take of this, or was some kids cosplay? Oh,
that's what I saw.
Yeah. I think Jerry Ryan retweeted it, because the girl that looked like Janeway looked just like Janeway. I mean, she had that smirk on her face, too. It was really good.
And speaking of Captain Janeway, the right below the picture there, Chuck continues.
Sorry, I was picking up some reverb on my voice, so I had to kill that. Didn't want it yet. We'll save that for later. Special effects. Okay, yes. Captain Janeway was not included in the story in the image of the Prodigy cast. As we have mentioned in previous episodes, Kate Mulgrew will be reprising her iconic role in this new series, making it disappointing not to see what her character will look like. The Hageman brothers explained that if they had included Janeway in the artwork, it would be the only thing the internet would be talking about. They did promise to reveal her image in due time.
In due time.
The abandoned Federation starship that the main characters came across and used for their adventures was also absent from the image. No word yet on when we will see what the ship looks like. We do know that Eagle Moss will be adding ships from Prodigy to their lines of Star Trek miniature vehicles, probably just in time for Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Captain Obvious.
Yeah. Exactly. So before we go into the next announcement about that, have you guys had a chance to look at this image, and do you have any thoughts about these main characters?
I really don't have any thoughts. I mean, you know, there's not much context there other than Star Trek, Nickelodeon.
This could be fun. This could be fun because, you know, as we mentioned before, the animated series gives you some powerful license to go in new directions with the aliens, the stories, the visual mm-hmm. effects. And as we've seen, you can do some crazy stuff on Lower Decks. So this looks like it's got a little more depth and detail, almost more of a mm-hmm. CG quality cartoon. But that's just one image speaking to me.
Well, I also know that we haven't seen Janeway at all.
Right.
Yeah, don't know what that means.
It's interesting to note here that this means this will be the first Star Trek series where humans are not, there's no humans in the main cast. Like Janeway, I think is she's going to be playing like an advisory role. Mm-hmm. I think. So this is the main cast and none of them are human.
The morphable blob is made out of proto matter. Watch out.
Yes, exactly.
He was on loan from the Orville.
No, he's on loan from the Expanse.
You don't want him in your ship. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to the second part of this, which was an interesting announcement. That was not the only announcement about Prodigy. The series, which is aimed at very young audiences, had previously been billed as being created exclusively for Nickelodeon. However, in the investor's call, Viacom CBS announced that the show will premiere all 10 of its season one episodes on Paramount Plus before this series makes its way to Nickelodeon. And we don't have a premiere date for it yet, but other than it's going to premiere in 2021.
Yeah, that's so you can write because we're all children at heart. We have the mind of a 10-year-old, so we're your target audience.
Well, my wife accuses me of being a 12-year-old all the time, so, or at least of acting
like too old. You're gonna have to wait.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great news for us cord cutters because I mean I don't have cable anymore, so I don't have Nickelodeon.
That's true.
And now I don't need it because it's gonna be here first.
I
would imagine that because Nickelodeon is now wrapped into the Paramount Plus universe, as it will, that probably would have, I could imagine it almost showing up at the same time there, which would be really confusing considering this announcement. But, you know, if it wasn't already there, when Nickelodeon started to show it, it would probably would have showed up at the same time. That's my guess anyway.
Right.
Because that's kind of what you're paying for.
That's right.
Stuff that's on the services.
So speaking of premieres, how's that for a segue?
Yeah, that was great.
And more news out of the investors call.
Yeah. Thank you, Eric.
Yeah. And more news out of the investors call. We also learned that at least two other Star Trek series will be premiering in 2021.
Yay!
Yeah. So first, season two of Lower Decks, which will be coming. That wasn't much of a surprise since we knew Mike McMahon and the team were already hard at work on season two. Before it even premiered in October. The other confirmed 2021 premiere will be Star Trek Discovery, just kind of a surprise, to me at least, season four. Disco was the live action series to go back to the front in front of the cameras, so that makes sense. And if reasoning holds true, then Star Trek Strange New Worlds and Picard will be showing up in some point in 2022 in that order. I can't imagine that Strange New Worlds will be that far behind Discovery 4 because that's already starting in production as well.
I think that Discovery started filming last year. I want to say October of last year.
Yeah.
So they had several months
Yeah, you're right. No, I meant as far as Strange New Worlds before Picard.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that will come next after all that.
Keep going. Talk later.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Wait, what?
And what about Section 31 series starring Michelle Yeoh as Emperor Giorgio? Apparently, it is in a holding pattern and will not go into production until the count till the five current seasons, Discovery, Lower Decks, Picard, Prodigy, and Strange New Worlds,
bingo,
as it runs course. Yeah.
So,
right. One of them has to be out for something for that to slot in.
Last Saturday, they had a virtual sail away party for Star Trek, the cruise, because it would have been the Star Trek Cruise 5 sailing on Saturday. Oh, how we wish we would have been there in an alternate reality that didn't have COVID.
Well, but in an alternate reality, you maybe you were.
A lot of the segments were, well, it was pre-recorded and produced. That was very obvious.
We do have a link in the show notes down in the other stories. There was a link to the video.
All righty. Cool. We watched, I think we missed like the first 20 minutes or so, and then we watched about an hour and then had to do something else. So it was a lot of fun. JT, the cruise director, was the MC/guest, and they were rotating in the different personalities, and occasionally they'd go to a remote segment. And Anthony Rapp said, "I'm here in my trailer. We're working on filming, you know, the last few seasons or few episodes of Discovery." So
a few seasons. Wow, they're really scenes. Knocking it out.
Scenes. I said scenes.
They're super busy.
We're getting ahead of the game.
Let's act fast and we'll just slow the cameras down.
Yeah, act faster. Thank you, George.
Harder, faster, more intense.
Yeah. Yeah, so not a big surprise certainly not a big surprise about Lower Decks. I think more than anything else, but
I would argue that went production way before anything else here.
Right. So we'll get three Star Trek series this year, which is a lot more than I thought we were going to get, you know, way things looked the middle of last year.
Yeah. Even when Discovery premiered, it was like, okay, you know, it'll be a slow slog to see anything else. You know, even the next season of Discovery, now I got like Picard and everything else coming out. So it's pretty cool.
I just wish that they had given a date for Prodigy. It must be completed by now. I've just got this feeling that they're just trying to hem and haw about what's the ideal date for it. So hopefully we'll get that soon.
Who knows? Yep.
A long weekend, like Memorial Day.
Yes.
All right.
Other news.
I think I get to the top of the mountain first.
Yes. Paramount Mountain.
He said crack.
Don't start that again.
In news that did not come out of an investor's call, Paramount bizarrely chose March 4th, the same day that Paramount Plus premiered, to make an announcement about the next Star Trek movie. Fear the Walking Dead co-executive producer Kalinda Vasquez is writing an original Star Trek movie for Paramount Pictures with J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot producing. Just the Bad Robot is producing, not J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
The Bad Robot is actually in Prodigy. That's a little robot.
It's
his brother. Okay. For those unaware, Ms. Vasquez is no stranger to Star Trek. She wrote the Short Treks episode Ask Not and Terra Firma Part 2, the conclusion of the Discovery Season 3 Return to the Mirror Universe. But in a deeper piece of trivia, Ms. Kalinda Vasquez was named after the character Kalinda in the TOS episode By Any Other Name. Remember the blonde girl with the knot on her head that looked like you could pick her up with a crane hook? Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Yeah, the one that her picture is in our show notes. Yes, I remember her.
It's a significant note that if the film gets to go ahead, Vasquez will be the first woman ever to pen a Star Trek feature. Good for her.
Pretty cool, because we missed out on having the first female director of a Star Trek movie, one of those ones that fell through previously. So
yeah,
fingers crossed on this one. All right, we have also learned that Nicholas Meyer recently pitched the Star Trek idea to Alex Kurtzman, J.J. Abrams, and new head of Paramount, Emma Watts. Now, this does not appear to be the Khan miniseries that Meyer wrote a few years ago. He recently told IndieWire, quote, "My partner, Stephen Charles Jaffe, and I wrote a whole treatment and planned for a Star Trek feature film. We didn't write the whole script. We wrote a very detailed treatment and a whole pitch doc with illustrations. It's a very comprehensive thing. It was a detailed proposal for what would have been a film or could have been a series or could have been a film leading into a series or a series leading into a film.
Make up your mind.
Or a series of films.
Yeah. Or an animated feature.
Yeah.
Or
I'm a doctor, not an editor.
Yeah. He went on to say that it was designed to be, quote, an independent piece of the Star Trek universe based on holes in the chronology, which would allow for the insertion of original material. The Meyer treatment is based around a group of new characters and does not directly tie into past storylines involving the original series or the Next Generation cast.
Okay.
As of this date, Meyer has not received a reply to the proposal, but he has not yet given up hope.
He keeps hitting refresh on Gmail.
Okay. Yeah. And the incoming message comes saying, oh, by the way, you know, this Vasquez woman, well, she's pending the next Star Trek movie at this point. So
he got an email that was excited because it was from Paramount, but it was regarding his Paramount Plus account.
I wonder if they named Vasquez Rocks after Kalinda.
Yes, they did. And Joe Fiore's daughter is named Kira. So if you had to
also pick after that blonde lady in Star Trek,
pick an inappropriate character from Star Trek to name your child after, just to be cruel, don't name your kid something like Mugatu.
No, because there's really the kid's going to find out what that is, and he's just not going to be happy.
Nicholas Meyer also said he wanted to do a flip cards that have little animated. Said it could, his story could be.
Oh, it could be that as well. Yeah.
A flip book. That'd be fun.
It could be a set of playing cards. It could be a series of tumblers that you sell at Burger King. It could be so many different things.
Yeah.
All right. Take us out of this silliness, Craig, with something else.
Oh, really? You trust me to take you out of silliness?
It's a long shot, but we're going for it.
Right.
You do realize what you just said.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah. Award season is in full swing and Star Trek is racking up more nominations and hopefully more wins. In addition to already being nominated for GLAAD Awards and the NAACP Image Awards, both Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard have now picked up nominations from three Hollywood guilds. The Visual Effects Society has nominated the Sukal episode of Discovery in the Outstanding Visual Effects in a Photoreal Episode category. I'm trying to let that one sink in. Awards will be presented in a streaming event on April 6th or 7th. I guess whenever you stream it, I don't know.
I guess. And I'm imagining because it says Visual Effects in a Photoreal Episode, mm-hmm. as opposed to something that's animated.
Cartoon. Like a cartoon.
Yeah, that type of thing. So this, you know, the Sukal episode had, you know, the Gormagander flying through up in the sky and all that.
You know, say what you want about Discovery in general. You can't fault their special effects. They've been phenomenal the entire time. So
absolutely.
Anyway, so Star Trek Picard was nominated for Best Special Makeup Effects. They made Picard look alive again. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry, I won't improvise.
Let's dog ear that for now. Okay?
By the Makeup Artists and Hairstylist Guild, it will be competing against Hollywood, in quotes, Lovecraft Country, The Mandalorian, and Westworld. Winners will be honored at a virtual gala on April 3rd.
That's quite the lineup.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. I'm not familiar with Hollywood, but yeah, the others are pretty big.
It's out there in Los Angeles where they make the movies, but that doesn't matter.
It's in quotes.
That's not important right now.
Okay. And the Canadian Alliance of Film and TV, Television, Costume, Arts, and Design.
That rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
I know.
It wraps around the award three times when they give it to you.
CAFTCPA. I was trying to make an acronym. Anyway, nominated Star Trek Discovery for six awards. They are led by costume designer Gersha Phillips, who was nominated for costume design in TV sci-fi slash fantasy for her work in That Hope Is You, Part One. Discovery is going up against Altered Carbon, Snowpiercer, The Expanse, and Odd Squad Mobile Unit, which I'm not familiar with at all.
Another isn't big Odd lineup. Squad,
isn't that the show that's on PBS with the kids as secret agents? I thought
it was a show from the 60s. No, that was the Mod Squad.
It was the Mod Squad.
Mod Squad. This is, I don't know. Well, whatever. I have to go look that one up. I guess I passed that age where I know everything. Just act like it now. Other nominations include Excellence in Crafts, Costume Illustration, Excellence in Crafts, Building, Excellence in Crafts, Textiles, and Excellence in Crafts, Special Effects Costume Building. And the awards will be handed out on May 1st.
I got an award, Excellence in Crafts Macaroni Art.
No, and I looked it up and I was correct. I mean, it's a must be a spinoff from the original Odd Squad.
That's
on PBS, yes.
By the way, this just in, we're getting an award for excellence in podcasting.
I did not know that. He's giving it to us. Eric's?
Yeah, that's right.
We only have two sound effects of Eric's, folks. Bear with us.
It's a gift that keeps on giving.
We'll use them wisely. Just days after the launch of the Indiegogo campaign to raise funds for Star Trek Voyager documentary, the drive has raised over $700,000, making it the second highest funded documentary in the Indiegogo history. 455 Films, the team behind both the Leonard Nimoy... I'm now speaking here. Get the Universal Translator. He's going into shock.
La 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 la.
The team behind the Leonard Nimoy documentary For the Love of Spock. I just love saying that. I'm going to use that every time something goes wrong.
For the Love of Spock.
Right.
I think I heard Dr. McCoy use that.
And the Deep Space Nine documentary, of course, What We Leave Behind, as well as Chaos on the Bridge and other Trek-centric productions, have had to add more stretch goals to their campaign. If you are interested in backing this project, we have a link over at the show notes on episode 87 over at thetopicistrek.com.
And finally, in news about other things you might not have known were a real thing, Lionel, yes, the train people, have announced more Star Trek train cars and that have been added to already available sets. That's right. Star Trek miniature trains are a thing. Apparently, it's a surprise to me.
Wagon train to the stars. You completely missed it.
Duh.
It's right there all the time.
It was right there. The three new cars include an ore car, which is filled with dilithium. Sounds
dangerous.
Yeah. Oh, we got a derailed train.
Let the Emerald Chain know about that. They'll take it.
Suddenly you've crossed over to Firefly and they're stealing the dilithium.
Yeah. The great train robbery.
That's right. And it features a glowing effect, a chaser car where Riker and Picard, Riker and Q figures dash about the gondola, and a tiny locomotive, which seems to resemble an Enterprise D shuttle and has a working strobe light. For everybody that has epilepsy, as well as an interior featuring Captain Picard. So Lionel has been re-releasing their main next generation Lion Chief train set, which is an upgrade to Bluetooth fiber. Where is this going?
I don't know. I've apparently been on the train thing for an awful long time because now it operates with Bluetooth.
Make it coal, number one.
Yeah, I was thinking of a train I had when I was a kid, but it didn't have Bluetooth 5.0. One of the trains in the set even features a glimpse into a holodeck. Okay, so we have a link to the complete show note Star Trek trains over at the show notes for episode 87. Over at thetopicistrek.com.
Yeah, it's a really bizarre set. I mean, it's strange because it seems to center mostly on Next Generation. And then there are these train cars, you know, your standard boxcar type of thing. And on the side of it, there's an L Cars display, but it's got things with Janeway on one of them with information about Voyager and one with Deep Space Nine and Cisco. And I don't know. It's very odd.
I'm looking at it right now. It's not even what I thought, you know.
I would have fun doing graffiti on these, like Romulus, Emerald Chain,
right? Yeah.
Enterprise dead.
Bat-leth.
Yeah, I mean, it really, essentially what it is a regular train set that's just skinned.
Yeah, it's stickered.
It. I like the dilithium crystals. Warp drive use only.
And then the tanker car is full of confiscated Romulan ale. So I don't know, that's great for a kid.
Yeah. Oh, there's a train car full of Tribbles. Specimen containment unit is what it says on the side. That's nice. Let's see. Are they happy?
Man, hey, they're charging a pretty penny for these too. Yeah, 80 well, by almost
they're
80
Bluetooth.
Bucks.
I mean, how can you? They're Bluetooth. You gotta, you know, because
bucks per car.
I'm gonna have to look this up on YouTube and see what the Bluetooth. Oh, they got a video. So if you go to the first one that has the entire a picture, has the entire train.
Oh yeah, there's a video.
Click on it. There's a video.
$479 for the fleet. All right.
You got to be a forward car. And this is a thing that you didn't know was a thing. And now you know more about it than you really wanted to.
You know, Lionel probably had this weird agreement with them before. As long as they produce Star Trek material, they can keep the license in perpetuity. So they probably just slap the Delta shield on there.
Yeah, it'll be fine. It'll be fine.
I look at this the same way I look at TikTok and go, it's not for me.
Yeah.
Well, I love Star Trek, but.
I imagine if you're into trains, you can't be a completist with being into trains because you would be broke.
I'll call Mike Menengay and see what he thinks. He's into trains.
Right. He is. That's right.
So there you go. We will find out. But
it's his birthday coming up on the 19th. I think we should all chip in. Start an Indiegogo campaign.
Right.
And get him a set of trains.
Okay. I found a YouTube video, and the first thing that pops up was a puppet of Yoda. And he's unboxing. And maybe I should put this in the show notes.
Yeah, crossing the streams there, it's just not right. All right. And in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada news, well, we don't have any new news, if that's a thing, new news. Out of Vulcan, but we are happy to report that the official StarTrek.com website recently did a feature article on the town, and we have a link to that. So somebody other than us is out there promoting Vulcan, Alberta, Canada.
I think we still need to get the mayor on here.
Well, I want to get the person in charge of the welcome station, but as we know, they've cut back the season for that. It's no longer open year round. Mm-hmm. So we have to wait until it's actually open to talk to somebody there.
Right.
We will be on that though.
We'll call them and leave a voicemail.
Right. We'll just record their voicemail message. Thank you for calling the Vulcan, Alberta, Canada Visitor Center. Our hours are closed. Please leave a message at the tone.
Yeah.
Our hours are. Yeah. Anyway.
Who's this guy laughing on our voice now?
That's creepy. Creepy, I tell you. That is kind of creepy. If you had an answering machine that had that message on it, that would be creepy.
You'd be like, what?
Hopefully we'd discourage a lot of people from leaving messages.
It was like Chucky or something. You know,
right. A string and Pennywise leaving you messages.
Yeah.
Well, we covered a lot of stories, including stories about trains and all sorts of things, but we have an additional 53 stories we did not have time to cover. Everything from a story about a set of digital Leonard Nimoy cards that are being introduced through the blockchain technology, to Brent Spiner's thoughts on a next generation big screen reboot, to a list of every holodeck accident in Star Trek's history so far. And I checked that article. And give them credit. The first holodeck accident they mention is Any thoughts on which one is the first?
The Holodeck Accident? Yeah. The animated series.
That's right. The one in the animated series.
Did you guys see the whole compendium video of every time McCoy said, "Damn it, Jim"?
No. Maybe I
I don't have a week and a half to watch a video.
No, no. It's only once. Oh. He only says it once. I believe it's Star Trek 4. He says, "Damn it, Jim, this is a birthday. Why are we treating it like a funeral?" And then there's like 3 minutes of black video. That was it. That was their whole collection. I thought that was brilliant. Like, is there more?
Like the beam me up, Scotty.
Right.
Yeah. I don't even think he said that at all.
But it's just the way that if you're trying to do a McCoy impression,
you have to do it.
The way that rolls out, you know, damn it, Jim.
Yeah.
It's right there. You got to do it. I mean, you can vary it with the damn it, Spock, you know.
Yeah.
That works too. But
the damn it, Eric's
seems to have damn it, Eric's.
Put that arm away.
You don't know where it's been.
You're gonna
HR told you to put that third arm away.
You're gonna get harassment for touching the other.
Oh, wait, on that note, we're gonna move on. It's time to disconnect.
Creepy.
We're disconnecting from subspace chatter. Goodbye, Charlie.
I want to stay.
I'm not sure after that.
That was one of our more bizarre subspace chatters.
I think he might want to be leaving. All right. I can see now why sometimes Charlie has issues with subspace chatter. Let's move on to our main mission. Do we have an appropriate sound effect for our main mission?
That'll work.
I can dance to it.
It just goes on like that, people. We're going to make a song.
Yeah, I was going to say, until... Anyway, this week we're picking back up on a review of all the Star Trek theatrical movies. Theatrical movies. The numbering system finally falls away as the first Next Generation movie is simply titled Star Trek Generations. You got some detailed information on it for us, Craig?
I don't think I've ever seen it.
Star Trek Geritol. Yeah.
So the story was written by TNG executive producer and writer Rick Berman, producer-writer Ronald D. Moore, and co-producer-writer Brandon Braga. The screenplay was by Ronald D. Moore.
That Ronald D. Moore.
Yes. The movie was directed by David Carson, who had directed 4 episodes of The Next Generation, including a fan favorite, Yesterday's Enterprise. He also directed 4 episodes of Deep Space Nine, including the pilot and a fun non-favorite, Move Along Home.
Ah, second chap.
Yeah. I'm trying to make sense of the non-favorite.
Well, anyway,
nobody liked it.
Fan non-favorite.
No, I mean, I usually don't point that one out.
It's like Threshold on Voyager.
Right. And Star Trek Generations premiered on November 18th, 1994, just 6 months after TNG series ended on May 23rd in 94. Screenwriters Moore and Braga have also written the series finale, All Good Things, which was awesome.
It's been over 20.
The last episode, the extended last episode of The Next Generation, and turned right around and we're writing the movie.
Mm-hmm.
At the same, and they were filming them, you know, back to back as well. So, boy, but that's some of the details, the nuts and bolts. But Chuck, can you give us like what actually happens in this movie?
I'm still coming to grips with that was more than 26 years ago.
I know, right?
Oh, I'm looking at the poster, going, it's holding up well, better than I am.
Yeah, at least it doesn't have any wrinkles.
Oh. All right, here's a brief plot synopsis. In the late 23rd century, retired Starfleet officers James T. Kirk, Montgomery Scott, and Pavel Chekhov are guests of honor aboard the newly christened USS Enterprise NCC-1701-B. However, her maiden voyage takes an unexpected turn when Cameron from Ferris Bueller is at the helm. No.
Right.
When the starship encounters two vessels trapped inside the Nexus, a mysterious energy ribbon. During a perilous rescue attempt, Kirk sacrifices himself in a heroic attempt to save the lives of the ship's passengers, because he's James T. Kirk. 78 years later, Captain Jean-Luc Picard and the USS Enterprise NCC-1701-D crew encounter Dr. Tolian Soren, a renegade scientist with a deadly plan to harness the power of the Nexus at the cost of millions of innocent lives. No, there are only like 230 million people on Viridian 4, but we'll go with that. Picard's only hope for the future now rests with the Nexus and the legendary captain from the past. Do you have any fun facts for us, Clinton?
I do. I do have some fun facts. This was the first movie to have a website created to promote it. Not the first Star Trek movie, the first movie.
Really? To have a okay.
Website created for
no it. Kidding.
To promote it. Yep.
In 94. Well, yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Was that was early.
Yep. At generations.viacom.com, which is very confusing. On October 28th, 1994.
They weren't real good with websites back then because no. Now it would be like Star Trek Generations, the movie.com.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It would Dash be, the it movie. Would be, they would have bought the domain name, but back then they had like / features / movie.html.
Yeah. I like the fact right. that it's just the website is just a subdomain of Viacom.com.
That's right.
Hilarious. DeForest Kelly, Leonard Nimoy, and George Takei were originally scheduled to appear in the beginning of the movie, but for various reasons, only Shatner, Walter Koenig, and Jimmy Doohan are in the film. The lines meant for the missing characters were simply assigned to Chekhov, Scotty, and Demora Sulu.
Brought a tear to me, I.
When Data right. sings his Tiny Little Lifeform song, the look of surprise on the crew members' faces was real. Originally, Brent Spiner was supposed to hum, but decided to ad-lib instead. Director David Karsten was so amused, he left it in.
That is a classic scene from Star Trek.
I know. I've sung it myself.
And in Captain Kirk's house, a wall cabinet features some interesting items, including a Klingon batleth.
I noticed mm-hmm. that. What was that doing about that? We'll get to that. I'm sorry.
A picture of the USS Enterprise from the original series. So that's the old TV series Enterprise. Various pistols. Yep. A phaser from Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
Yep.
A Jem'Hadar weapon from Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
A photo of the original crew of the Enterprise from Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. Which is, I didn't see that photo, and I'm wondering if it's the same photo that we also see in Star Trek Beyond that, you know, is in Spock's personal belongings that alternate timeline Spock finds.
There were a few things that just seemed out of place in that house, and I had to take a step back and go, what?
Yeah, the Jem'Hadar stuff and the Batleth, you could make an argument because there's no reason why he wouldn't, because he's met Klingons.
But we never saw a Klingon in that period with that kind of batleth before,
right,
though.
Right, right. What I'm saying is that he met Klingons, and they should have had batleths. So there's no reason why, even though we didn't see them, that they didn't have them.
Well, you know, Klingons get killed, and batleths just sitting around. So, I mean,
if you pick it up, what you got to do.
Wow, that's very World War II of you, Craig.
well, it's all... It's all a fantasy here.
I got this.
They bring it on themselves. They bring it on themselves. They take.
So
stop now. Just stop now, Craig.
let's move on to the movie itself. All right. We're talking about Generations.
Yes.
I was going to say there's also some interesting items behind Data when Geordi and Data are in his room.
Mm-hmm.
I assume that's his room. Where you know they're discussing the emotion chip.
His drawing of Spot the cat and so forth is in the background, so I'm assuming that is Data.
Yeah, so there was the red hat with a feather
from their Robin Hood.
Yeah,
holiday.
He wasn't wearing it during Robin Hood, but yeah, it looks like one of those kind of like that, or one of the plays. I can't remember where it was, where one of the plays he was doing. But there were some other interesting items behind him that, that, you know, you would be familiar with in the background too. So they really whoever the set designer was, they really loaded that down.
Well, I've got a feeling some of it was to hide the fact that they were just using the television sets to make a movie. So you have to throw a lot more detail into everything to make mm-hmm. it.
Seem, oh, sure.
You know, yeah. For the big screen.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, because I don't remember the emotion chip having that. Maybe it did, but I don't remember the having that, you know, little sharper image type of magnetic field that it would just float around in.
Yeah, look, I got a gold rock that floats in the air that from sharper image.
Wasn't the emotion chip damaged?
Well, they got it out of Lore when Lore...
And I thought it was fried. It.
Maybe Geordi's been busy.
Okay. I also don't remember it being so clunky. I mean, this thing looked rather...
There were 6 months between...
6 months.
Between the series and the movie.
A lot
movie.
Of time to work on that.
Okay. All right. Well, speaking of clunky, was it me or does the Enterprise B look chunkier than you remember it a few years ago?
No, because I remember it specifically at the time, because essentially it's the Excelsior.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And at the time when you first see it, I go... Those extra things on the side are there for probably only one reason. And they were only there for one reason. So you could blow up that section and not harm the Excelsior model.
Yeah. But didn't we read some about that? I remember seeing it. They added some occurrence. Yes, that's exactly why they added that. Was so that it didn't damage the original model. That is right. That is correct.
Plus, and I had to look at the footage to make sure of this, because one of the trivia things is, when they're going to the rescue and you have the shot of the Enterprise B shooting through space, that is actually a shot of the Excelsior from Star Trek VI when Sulu was racing to get to where the Enterprise is.
Yep. That stuck out like a sore thumb. The and the other thing that was reused from Star Trek VI was Tim Russ.
Yes, well.
And he's also the first one in the movie to say some sort of.
Yeah, so. Well, you know, has to be the drinking game with his character now.
How many people did they get off of the LaCool?
47
out of 150. Yes, take a drink. There was plenty of drinking to be had in this movie.
Well, I like how, you know, Kirk has that look, like he turns his whole head and looks at Scotty like, I don't even have to ask.
What was the point in the phaser relay thing where he climbs down the ladder, punches a button, this box elevates, and it comes back up the ladder? Like, that was the stupidest design.
Yeah. Actually, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, who made this?
Well, I was thinking that I couldn't tell if the director trying to be clever was trying to throw in a motif of bridges. Because this is supposed to be bridging the generations, and then Kirk dies on a bridge.
Oh, okay.
And Kirk is, you know, he's on that same type of metal gangway when he gets blasted out.
Right. And he rides the bridge down the hill. Whee!
So I don't know whether that had something to do with these decisions. Although the shot, the whole ending for Kirk was a reshoot. So they probably didn't think that far ahead, because in the original audience test version of this movie, Sauron just ends up shooting Kirk in the back.
That's even worse.
Right. So they reshot the ending for this. And even at that point, Malcolm McDowell says, you had all this time to think of something and that's what you came up with.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep going in chronological order of things I noticed. The ship was damaged. Sections 20 through 28, decks 13 through 15. Engineering. When was engineering in the front, in the bow of the ship?
Well, never mind that. When would you put a captain like that in charge of the flagship of the fleet?
A captain like that?
Like that?
You know, Harriman is like, oh, I got to put the bullet in my gun. I mean, what the heck was that all about?
Hold on.
Did you notice as they were showing the damage and the ship kind of goes over the camera shot that it said Enterprise on the bottom of the deflector dish. That was very subtle.
Ah.
Okay. Then we cut to the Enterprise wooden ship at sea. And
I also had a note here. We have that we have the problem with Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan that Chekhov wasn't in that, right?
Yes.
He wasn't in the space seed one.
Right, right.
Chekhov should be the villain in this to Sauron because he's the one that gives him the hypo thing that knocks him out and doesn't let him get back to the Nexus. So he should be his sworn enemy.
So we're going to have our wrath.
It's his fault he missed the Nexus.
That's right.
So I missed my ride.
Well, not really. The ship blew up. I had to take it off.
I'm also trying to figure out, I think this is more of a question this is kind of a forward question. If she shows up on Picard, Guinan in the time of Kirk and Spock and McCoy, 78 years before the Next Generation, looks the same. Now, what if she shows up in Picard?
Looking much older. 20 years later.
That, yeah.
Hey, she got some mileage on the Enterprise.
I picked up smoking in the last 20 years.
Oh, I see.
Woo.
By the way, I liked the Wile E. Coyote moment when Worf jumps for the hat, gets the hat, and then...
Cartoon physics.
Yeah, he says, remove the plank, and he's standing there while the thing disappears and doesn't fall until he realizes the plank is gone. Yes! That was classic.
Well, I tell you, that first, the scene on the Seven Seas was the point which I said, okay, I can see this is going to be like a Next Generation episode in the worst way possible.
Oh, you didn't like the ship?
Oh, I hated it.
Really?
It's like this movie, when I saw it in the theaters, I thought, I don't like this movie. And I thought, well, maybe it melded with age. I really don't like this movie.
You don't like the movie as a whole or just that scene?
No, as a whole, it's like, okay, Picard spends 21 minutes just puttering around on surface.
Viridian 3 by the missile launcher. I thought that was a little drawn out. I was looking at the play clock as the movie was going by. I'm like, we are an hour and 15 minutes into this thing, and we haven't got to the Nexus yet.
Yeah, and then when he goes back, and look, we're back at Viridian, 3 again, and do the whole thing all over again. Oh,
the one thing I will, there was a bright, shiny spot in here, and that really is Patrick Stewart's acting. When he discovers that his family died, and he breaks down in front of Troy, I thought that was good.
I thought the lighting was
dark.
Ridiculous.
Well, the lighting was because they were near the Amargosa star system, and the star was coming in. I thought... When Riker walks into the captain's ready.
But every place, it made it look like, oh, somebody opened up the back door of the sound stage.
I thought that was
cheap.
But think about it. That was the first time they've actually used genuine lighting from a star in the ship. Even when they're next to a star, they haven't done that in any other episode.
It's Star Trek. They should do something with a star.
Well, I think they were also trying to give the show a different look and feel. The movie, a different feel from the show.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that was definitely the intent. I just thought the lighting was horrible. I thought when you get to Picard and Troy having the conversation, it's like, do they even know each other are still in the room? Because it's so dark in there now. It's like, I can hear you talking, Picard. Are you still here?
Riker walks in. Hey, why are the lights off in here, guys? But
I want to hear the rest of the joke from the Farpoint episode, because the punchline, the clown can stay, but the Ferengi and the gorilla suit would have to go.
Even backing it up even further, the beginning of the movie, I liked the ship scene because it's a holodeck and they were doing something special for Worf. I love the whole buildup with the Dom Perignon at the beginning. But I liked it because it was, okay, we're in a ship, we're on the water. And at first you're like, okay, what's going on? And you go, oh, they're okay. They're on a holodeck. And, you know, I thought it was kind of funny. And then it kind of sets the tone for Data and his emotion chip when he pushes Crusher off the
not yeah. funny Data. What was with the mismatched uniforms though? There was the black and red, and there's the red and black. Oh, and Geordi switched halfway through to
I saw everything from the original collared ones, the tights, to the DS9. And I think a lot of that was that they borrowed uniforms from other people. Riker's uniform is actually Avery Brooks's.
But why would you switch? Geordi switches partway through the movie.
No, that's why sleeves are rolled up because it didn't fit.
Isn't that though? Isn't that First Contact, or is that Generations, or is that First Contact?
I thought it was Generations. That's why the sleeves are rolled up.
Okay. I do know that they were intending for all those costumes, and apparently the only place the new uniforms actually showed up was the toy line, because the toy line had had gotten the illustrations ahead of time.
Oh yeah, they had the newer look, that's right. And
here's another one for you. He launches the trilithium into the star at the Amargosa Observatory.
Spoiler alert.
It's blowing up, and what speed do we choose to get away? Warp 1! That's it? You're in a crisis situation. You want to kick it into 10? Seconds to spare.
Warp 10, something. Well,
never mind
warp something.
We're going to jump ahead, because I want to talk about the other, one of the other things in here is this idea that it's going to take 11 seconds from the surface of Viridian 3 for that solar probe to hit the sun, and they're launching it like with a liquid fuel launching
pad. And the missile gets there faster than the shockwave comes back.
Not only that, it doesn't take 11 seconds, because I stopped in time to figure out I might as well do it.
Oh, movie time is never real. Just stop right there.
It took 14 seconds to travel that 11 seconds. It's like, how can it be what appeared to be liquid fueled on the ground if it hit warp at a certain point?
I gave up on the missile physics on that one.
Yeah.
So they're in stellar.
Even the second missile was like super. Yeah. I mean, both of them were like really quick.
This is the first time we've encountered the ribbon, yet they're in stellar cartography, and they said, "Oh, the ribbon comes by every 39.1 years." How do we know that?
Yeah. Why is it a surprise now?
Well, also, stellar cartography, why is it flat and very one-dimensional? It's space. Why is it not a complete dome?
I thought it was a dome.
It's a wraparound, and there's a dome, but the dome is nothing. It's just
it looks like Professor Xavier's Cerebus.
It's not like a planetarium. It's just got this
Cerebro display. It looks like Cerebro from X-Men.
Right. That's,
that's because it was Picard. Going,
I can get used to being in here.
I've got an idea, number one.
For Cerebro in the X-Men movie, they just repurposed the stellar cartography.
We may need somebody like Dr. Aaron McDonald on this one. But if you stop the fusion in a star and the star collapses, I don't think that changes the mass of the star. You didn't take any matter away.
Correct.
So that doesn't change the gravity. Therefore, you can't steer the ribbon.
No, but he was trying to change the gravity. But I guess
he was changing the mass of the star to change the gravity of that system so that it would be bent in a different direction. I'm not buying it.
Okay.
I'm not an astrophysicist, so we need to call a win in on that one. Oh, we do get to see Brian Thompson in a Klingon getup.
Hold on. You're moving along too fast.
No, I'm just going chronologically right through this thing. Pretty much scene by scene.
I have a chronological list, but I'm just bouncing around to whatever strikes my fancy.
Well, all right. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Brian Thompson was, you will recognize this man because he's got a very distinctive mouth. He almost looks like he has a pack of chew in his lower lip. And he is at the helm or behind the captain's chair in the Klingon vessel. And you'll often hear him talking with a very deep voice. He was also in the Orville, DS9, and Next Gen.
Right. He gets pushed aside when, for some reason, the Duras sisters think they can enhance better.
Yeah, enhance better.
but you, what did you have, Craig?
Well, going back chronologically.
That's okay. It's the Nexus. We can go wherever we want to.
Oh, okay. Time doesn't matter.
Good call.
All right. So, I thought.
Yeah. He agrees with me. It's funny.
I like how the news people are still annoying in the future as they are today.
Well, they're right in your face, for crying out loud.
Well, actually,
for the love of Spock.
Look, yeah, it's funny. This movie, now at the time, you know, 1994, of course, we had some, you know, miniature tape recorders and stuff, but this is kind of foreshadowing a lot of stuff because they had the cameras on their side of their head. And, you know, I thought that was kind of interesting, where Star Trek actually has projected some technologies, and in some ways they kind of did this here.
Well, one of the pieces of trivia that I couldn't confirm, but I'll take it as trivia and would have to check on it, is that a lot of those things that the reporters were holding were handheld gaming devices.
Yes, look like
I have a fun fact right here. Fun fact, Viridian 3 is only about an hour from Las Vegas. It is. The scene where they shot that is called the Valley of Fire. Yeah. It's near Overton, Nevada. It's a state park. So I did a look up on that and I went, wow, Viridian 3 is only an hour from Las Vegas. We'll have to go there sometime.
I also noticed that on the Research Observatory, now they had Mark V torpedoes.
Yeah.
Right.
Mark V torpedoes. Aren't Mark V torpedoes the torpedoes that they had in The Wrath of Khan?
So they shot Spock in, wasn't
it? Yes. I'm pretty sure they sent Spock off to Genesis.
That's really old tech on that. On that research station.
Well, they're a research station. They don't get the latest and
really
greatest.
Old. Really
I have a problem. Okay, riddle me this. They're being attacked. First of all, why would you put the shield harmonic frequency on a bulletin board in front of you?
It's not a bulletin board.
Effectively, it's a bulletin board. Why do you need that? They also put like the security code to lower your shields. I mean, it's just... You don't put that stuff on.
I got a better one, though. I got a better one on that in that regard.
Yeah.
Why doesn't the Enterprise have modulating shields
by
after board
default? Attack? No kidding.
I figured that would be the default by now.
And your tactical officer, who's a Klingon, should know about Klingon ships. You know, this is the old, you know, DY-12, whatever it was, class ship. Why were they decommissioned? Faulty plasma coils. Okay, you should know the weakness of your opponent at the ready.
Well, he knew that part. Well, he just knew didn't
it.
Know.
No, they had to come up with that. Is it like how could we use that against them?
No, I mean he knew the weakness, but yeah, Riker's the one that came up with how to use it, right?
No,
right.
Data did.
No, Riker didn't. Then he.
Well, he Riker had an idea, Data. But he asked Data.
If that's your job, you should. Right. I mean, you go back and you look at aviators. They know where to shoot the other plane. Because they've studied it ahead of time. They don't look through their manual and go, oh, look, it's a MiG-15. What are the weaknesses I could... Not in flight. You know, you prepare. Do your job ahead of time, Worf.
Yeah.
And I have a note here saying the Dumas sisters were the best thing about the movie as far as I was concerned.
I like the fact that, I forget which one it was, Lursa or Beator, when they're about to blow up, she pulls a Chang and faces the screen and then it just... Boom. And of course, then they use the footage of Chang's ship blowing up.
Hey, yeah, I think it's funny how she looks at the screen. She turns around and look everybody else. And then she kind of does that. Oh, you know.
Yeah.
So I've been hit.
Meanwhile, back on Viridian 3, Picard is trying to climb through the little hole where the shield doesn't reach and he gets stuck. So Soren takes
that work
aim.
To begin with, by the way, how does it work that the shield just there's a hole so that the shield doesn't do that?
That big it was in the Archie rock is
the rock was blocking the force field. So he gets stuck. Soren takes aim. He's got a sight, a scope on his little wrist pistol, and he misses by a vast margin. I mean, he is just a terrible shot, even with a scope.
He's the gun a scientist sucks. Or whatever he is, I don't know.
His aim sucks.
So. At the going back to the beginning because I'm going chronological order.
Fine. Nexus.
That's good. I'm going to the Nexus next.
So, I did like, especially watching it, not necessarily. Well, the rewatching, I should say. I appreciated Captain Harrison when he's struggling to try and make something work. He's trying to save face. And handle the thing at the same time. I thought he did a really good job pulling that off as an actor. And then he even had that moment where he sat down in the chair and you see him just turn his eyes over at Kirk because you know he wants to ask him or, you know.
Well, I think at that point is also like I'm failing in front of a legend here.
Yeah.
But he recognized when he was out of he was beyond his depth.
Yeah, I thought he did a great job with that.
Okay, back to the Nexus.
I don't have a problem with his acting of it. I just have a problem with the concept that would be the captain of the ship.
The captain won't be delivered till Tuesday.
Exactly.
Oh, by the way, you mentioned Worf jumping on the thing to grab the hat.
Yeah.
If you look later, he has a bloody knee.
Oh.
When he's coming up out of the water. Is it coming up out of the water? Right in that, I'm trying to remember if he's, when he's falling, I'm trying to remember now which, at what part, but when he's outside the ship, you can see it looks like his knee, like he has a bloody knee. I'm like, why would he have a bloody knee? Unless it's
barnacles. Barnacles.
I was thinking it's probably stained from the set, you know, just on a knee, but
It
looks like blood, like he skinned his knee or something.
a fun fact, when Picard gets the notice about the death of his brother and his nephew.
Yep.
And he goes through the arch and Troy says to the person, you know, take over.
Take the wheel.
Take the wheel. The guy that takes the wheel is a person who actually owns that ship that they were using.
Oh, that's cool.
Really?
Get off my boat!
The first time I saw that, it looked like Patrick Stewart with a beard.
Yeah.
Did you notice that one of the spokes on the wheel had a little rope wrapping, compass? Like a bracelet on it? No. Had like a little bracelet?
Yeah.
That's
the rudder up, isn't it?
What's that?
Is that where the rudder's straight?
Well, that's so you know where you're going straight, but it might actually be on the bottom, but you know how many revolutions you've turned the wheel. So if you're going on a course correction, you can actually get it back because you can't see the rudder and you don't know exactly where you're going. So it's a crude calibration system. Meanwhile, back on the Nexus, why did Picard's kids and wife had colonial clothing?
Well, it was.
They're French. They all dress like that.
No, everybody in France doesn't dress like the 1800s. No.
It was a very Charles Dickens, which is another note. It was like, why did Picard's vision of paradise, if you will, be a English Charles Dickens-ish Christmas?
They've crossed that French-English line way too many times.
Why didn't they just make him English to begin with?
You do know that his blonde son, the actor who plays that, was also on Janeway's holodeck program as well. When she was the, not the headmistress, the school teacher, the school marm for those two kids on Voyager.
Right.
They had the little boy and the little girl. That was the same little boy who played that part. Kirk's uncle's farm in Idaho sure looks an awful lot like the hills of California.
Well, that's because it's Shatner's house, it's Shatner's horses, it's Shatner's dog.
Butler! Was it Shatner's Qatarian eggs, too?
Might have been.
Actually, those are pretty big eggs. I'd eat them.
the woman was... I'm sorry, you go ahead, Kirk, because I've got...
Well, I noticed on the Enterprise bridge, you know, we talked about the lighting and they're trying to give it some depth or a more epic feel, I guess. But, you know, along the left and right of the bridge, as you can, the little walkways, the catwalks, there was actually workstations there. And of course, the platform for them, for the captain and everybody to sit on. But along the side, there were workstations where there had been just blank walls before, you know, in the show.
So again, I think that's that we need to add more detail so it doesn't seem empty.
No. On a TV show, it can be empty.
In that long, drawn-out scene where Picard was, you know, doing nothing but throwing rocks at the force field, at some point, Soren loses his coat. I don't know when that happened, but it must have gotten warm during the day. So he was wearing a coat at one point, and then it was just gone. We don't know.
The force field.
Very warm that time of year.
Especially greenhouse effect inside the force field.
See, that's why he blew up the sun. He's like, I'm too hot. Can we get rid of the sun?
And why, I hate suns. Why, when they're on that bridge, you know, Sorn fires and the bridge collapses and Picard and Kirk are there. The thing is shaking like crazy, but then they get up to the top and they look across. There's the pad on the other side. Neither side are shaking until Kirk goes back onto the bridge, and then it starts shaking like crazy again. Like
they keep showing the metal on the bolts. And I was like, did somebody make that out of silly putty? It's like cardboard and silly putty.
Well, also, if you're going to have a device, and this may also be a problem of how much do you reshoot? If you're going to have a device that you have to believe has gotten itself wedged on that catwalk, don't have thing with just big flat sides on it.
Right.
It's like, why is that thing just that slide off immediately? If it had little doodads and it could get caught someplace, I could see it, but it's just, why would that? It's like
it was very unbelievable that it was stuck right there. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like, well, that was lucky. Okay. Craig, what were Kirk's dying words?
Oh my.
Yeah, there you go.
Which apparently was an ad lib that he did on the set. And I have a question now. The saucer crash lands on Viridian 3.
Mm-hmm. Somewhere.
Did everyone on the Enterprise end up in the Nexus? Because I can't believe that the Nexus is so narrow that it's the width of Malcolm McDowell.
Well, when they
Picard,
I kind of figured it kind of skirted the planet.
In stellar cartography, yeah, in stellar cartography, they did show that it kind of took a slice through the planet. So, but it made it appear that, you know, Kirk and Picard are obviously in this very desert, dry region, an hour and a half from Las Vegas, and they're in a very woodsy, temperate climate. So, but yet at the end of the movie, it's like he just walks there or something.
Right. They just send a shuttle over and, you know, that it's fine. It would have made more sense if, because they have to beam Picard down to Viridian 3. So if in the battle with the Klingon ship, if somehow they'd moved to, could be, since we know that Viridian 4 is populated, Viridian 2 or something, and that they crash land on this other planet.
That's what it felt like.
But they don't. They land on Viridian 3. So it's like, I'm thinking, I would think they'd end up in the Nexus. And they don't, no one seems to say anything about that. So I guess they didn't.
And fun fact, that Kirk is buried next to Wash.
Well,
come on. Too soon.
What about your spoilers?
Yeah, too soon.
What? One from 94 and one from 2005.
Yeah. Hey, so, I liked every time from the show to the movie, every time they remove Data's head, it's always in a different way. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes it's the back, sometimes it's the top, sometimes it's the side. It's like, does it just, you know, pop open?
Right. And this time they go, look, we're going to all do it all on camera. One shot. See, you do this.
Yeah.
And he turns around and you can. Another piece of trivia that Antonia, this woman that we've never heard reference to before in all Star Trek, that this was originally supposed to be Carol Marcus. And they were told to change it.
Why? Why'd they tell them to change it?
That would have been more solid canon.
Right. Because you never see her. I don't like, why would you?
You just hear her from upstairs. Are you still rummaging around in the kitchen?
Why haven't you finished my breakfast yet?
Wow, someone's hangry upstairs. So
the only thing I can possibly think of is that somehow there were rights issues with that character that you didn't have with the TOS characters, since that was created specifically for Star Trek 2, maybe they were just having some legal.
That's weird. But okay.
I have a problem with Kirk's closing line when he says, what we leave behind is not as important as how we've lived. I think that is completely backwards.
Right.
It just seems so off to me that they would put in, like, that's so profound, Captain Picard. And the more I thought about it, no, that's completely backwards.
Well, I think that Ronald D. Moore was the one who said that we were a bunch of young people trying to write something profound about old people.
Well, it's funny. Well, it's funny. He wrote it, right? And that was the last episode of DS9. That's the title of the last episode of DS9.
Yes. So I think it shows that, you know, well, this is what it's like to be old and reflecting back on your life, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what the kids say.
All right. I'm out. That's all my notes.
I enjoyed the fact that one of the kids on the ship, that we suddenly see kids again.
Yes.
He has what appears to be is a white tribble that he's walking around with.
Oh, dear. Hope it's been neutered.
And I couldn't figure out
why. Let's get them in water.
I couldn't figure out why Geordi wanted to get the kids to the Jeffries tube.
There was blown plasma conduit in corridor 5.
Yeah, he was hoping they'd fix it.
You know, I thought the whole point was just get them to the main saucer section.
I get it. I get it. They keep the children on there because they're cheap labor.
Oh, now I
get it. They eat the tribbles. It tickles.
And I felt like the shot of the girl who drops the stuffed Bear? Animal.
Yeah.
That would pay off for something that it should mean more than it seemed to. Cause I'm thinking I should feel something that is happening. And I'm not.
They had to edit it out because later when the ribbon comes by, that animal is stuck in the bulkhead.
Oh,
it's a callback to that episode.
Yeah. And then later
to see that
she was supposed to be the villain in the next movie. You know, she's jaded and angry because she lost her little bear.
The Wrath of Tiffany.
And we get to see them reuse the footage one more time of the only other time that you see it for the Enterprise.
The saucer separation.
The saucer section.
Without the glorious music from Farpoint.
Right.
Dun, 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 dun,
so Chuck, did you hate on this movie too?
I didn't hate it. I thought it was good in spots, but it was full of Swiss cheese holes.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy it.
It's not at the bottom of my list. It's not Star Trek V, Final Frontier.
Nothing is Star Trek V except Star Trek V.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, yeah, so is it time for the ratings?
It is time. Well, do you have any more notes, Craig? You got more stuff there?
Only that I do. I like the Excelsior / Enterprise design. That style ship. I thought it was kind of nice.
Nah, I'm not a big fan of it.
I thought it was all right.
And the fun part about having that ship in there was just the fact that you then saw NCC 1701. You've seen A.
Yep.
You've seen B.
We've seen C.
And you've seen D.
And we've seen K.
Soon we'll have E.
Well, right. So we see E in, which one was that? Was that?
First Contact.
Right. So.
And definitely Insurrection.
And then I don't.
I mean, not Insurrection, but.
Then you see like the.
The Insurrection.
Was it J that you see in Enterprise? The one that's the big
flag. K.
That was Voyager J.
Yeah, it was K.
Okay. All right, I think that's all I have as well. So
actually,
yes.
Eagle Moss has K.
And then you see the Botany Bay as a kazoo.
It's like a submarine.
That's what the Botany Bay was.
Oh, yeah, so now it's time to be doing our ratings.
Oy.
Oy vey.
Pick an order, Chief.
All right, I'm trying to think if we have a good rating system. Okay.
One to five nacelles.
No, we've been doing 1 to 10 on everything else.
Okay, all right, 1 to 10.
Yeah, so 1 to 10 Shatner, Doberman, Pinschers.
All right,
I'm going to rate this. I'm going to rate this a 3.5.
Wow. That's below most cartoons.
I looked at my watch a lot of times in the theater. When I first saw this movie, I looked at it more when I watched this again going, when does this thing get moving again?
We should have had a watch party with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should have done that. Yes, we should have done that.
Well, we'll do it for Nemesis. Nah, well, I'll share that pain. But all right. But let's see next. I will go to Chuck. We'll go with you next.
I thought there were a few more redeeming moments. I was not looking at my watch, but occasionally I would pause and go, we're not to the Nexus yet. How far into this? You know, there were some things that were just time dilated. The I'm going to give it a, I'm torn between a 6.5 and a 7. I'm going to go with a 6.5.
Okie dokie. And Craig.
Well, I think I liked it more than you guys. I would definitely give it a, I was going to go with like a 7.5. Okay. Because I enjoyed a lot of it. You're right. The pacing is wrong in a lot of places, especially when they're, he's tossing rocks, you know, I'd rather see Opie tossing rocks into the pond than, but I like Data. Data really did a great job, or Brent Spiner did a great job with Data in this, with the motion and everything. And then, so there's a lot to like, so I'm going to 7.5.
Okay. And as I think I've mentioned before, because Craig and I have had this discussion, nobody's wrong. Everybody's right in their ratings on this, because everybody's,
except for you, Clinton.
Everybody's right in their own mind.
I'm super right.
That's super right.
Everyone's right in their own mind.
That's right.
Because it's your opinion. If everybody liked the same thing, then we'd all have the same thing and we'd all get bored with
a boring show.
All that stuff anyway. All right. So it is now time to come back from our main mission.
Wow, Eric's got good at that.
Yeah, he's getting very good. I think he's been inspired by that whole reference to opium, the whistling and the again, remember, we can't only sing no bars of a song. So we can. So on our Warp Speed Roundtable, this is an interesting question that we had in our pool of questions. If you could make one meal with a replicator, what would it be? And with whom would you share it? And well, I assume with whom you would share it, not make it, because the replicator's making it. And the whom would be a Star Trek character.
Okay.
I will start with, let's go reverse order here. So I will start with Craig on what meal would you make with a replicator and with whom?
If I could only make one meal?
Yeah.
With a replicator.
He's going to pick that cup of coffee and chicken sandwich that Kirk had on Deep Space. Right. Yeah.
What's this fuzzy thing in here? Tastes good.
Space Station K-9.
I'm thinking I would make the Fred Flintstone ribs with Fred Flintstone. There you go.
That's not a Star Trek character.
Star Trek character.
Oh, Star Trek character.
Wow.
Okay. I'll go with the Flintstone ribs and with Shatner.
I would have picked
up. I'm sorry, Kirk.
Klingon, man. Attack those things.
Klingon.
You're going to need a batlet to eat them.
Yes. There you go. With Kirk. I'll hang out with Kirk.
What about you, Chuck?
I meant to replicate a beer, by the way, to go with the ribs.
Got it.
I've been going through Voyager episodes, and I recently came across the episode, The Shoot, where Tom Paris and Harry Kim are thrown into prison. They're on a space station. They're hungry, and they're getting through this by thinking of wonderful meals. And they came up with so many great things that I'm just going to make that everything they said and invite them, because they were really good about it with the barbecue ribs and the bed of wild rice and cherry something chocolate pudding. And went, yeah, everything. You guys were great. So there was like 72 different things they had thought of in that episode. They're all on me.
That sounds messy if they're all on you. But anyway, I would
replicator
go,
blew up.
I'm going to go old school, and I would have a cup of plummet soup, and I would share that with Spock, because
want to find out the wall.
What's up with, as long as he doesn't throw it, you know, that would.
What? Tuvok
had a bowl or two of that too, but Neelix just destroyed it. He spiced it up.
Yeah, you know, first of all, I want to find out is that acceptable to make in a replicator for Spock, or does he, is he really old school? It has to be freshly made with fresh ingredients.
Yeah. Or, you know, I could go for those mashed potatoes in Star Trek, you know, six,
the one with no pot and the potato masher whisk standing straight up.
Right.
That's one giant tater tot right there. I tell you, right.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to take a step back. I know they had a chef, mm-hmm. but on Enterprise, I'd rather eat with Archer and Trip, because they seem to eat pretty good in the captain's mess. So.
That's right. They did. When it wasn't Riker making the.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, Sans the replicator, but
every single meal is pizza. What is it with this guy with the oven?
Yeah. And by replicator, I mean chef.
Exactly. All right. Well, if you have an opinion, a thought on what meal you would make, it could be gach. You know, of course, I don't know. You can't really make gach out of the replicator.
No. It would just be alive. It looked like gummy worms just sitting there.
Thank goodness you can't make Leola root soup either.
A bowl of warm gummy worms.
Yeah. I'd call it gach too.
Yeah. If a bowl of blech.
Yeah.
Then let us know. And we've got information on how to leave us a comment in just a bit. But it's time to refill the dilithium chambers and try at least to warp on out of here. But we've got lots of dilithium because we hijacked that train car full of dilithium.
That's right. Don't tell anybody. We were supposed to say anything.
I'm sorry. You can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com. You can also find me on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and MeWe and possibly the local little screen at the gas station where they're showing the little trailers and stuff.
Oh, I have seen you there.
Yeah, you might find
me. You selling realty now?
I am, but who speaks for you guys? Let's talk about that right now.
Well, you can find Chuck and I over at the Technorama podcast. You can just search for Technorama podcast in your Googles and you will find it.
I'm searching like now.
I'm searching right now.
Just punch it into your console.
That's right. So go find us everywhere you can find podcasts just like this one.
Indeed. All right, but it's time to hit the theme, boys. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never, ever miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on the red shirt.
Nanu, nanu.
Nexus, we just relive this episode over and over again.
No.